The PGA Tour presents the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America, streaming live on PGATour.com. Follow us today and every day on Twitter at Golf Talk America. Now, the Golf Talk America crew.
And hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you, and we're coming to you on Friday. Round two, as you're keeping track of the PGA Tour stop, round two of the RBC Heritage at Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, one of the prettiest places in the country to be playing golf. We'll, of course, keep you updated on what's happening there in the second round, what happened in the first round, obviously yesterday, and weather is certainly going to be an issue over the weekend. So once again, almost like the Masters, there could be some adjustments made on the schedule because spring weather is always seems to happen in general, but certainly for the PGA Tour is something that everybody has to keep an eye on. Stage on that as well and what it might mean to the players at the RBC Heritage. Our good friend Diane Knox with Secret Golf will be joining us very shortly to give us a report on RBC Heritage. She has spent the last few days there and tell us what's going on there and help us out a little bit to maybe forecast who we think might be able to do something. Charlie Hoffman had a very good first round, along with a few other guys, Ryan Palmer, and as always, Dustin Johnson in the hunt right there in his backyard. So Diane will be joining us very, very shortly. Frank Bassett, as always, in the Nashville studios, join us right now. And Frank, last time we talked, you were at Augusta, then you made a pit stop in Atlanta. So it's been a while. Haven't talked to you in a while. How you doing?
Doing good. Good to be back on the air with you, Tim. I was in Augusta with Diane, as a matter of fact. She was doing the shows with us from there, and then made the pit stop in Atlanta. Of course, the PGA Tour Champions event is there this week. And I should have gone to RBC, but I just needed to get home and get some rest. Man, Augusta was, it was a long two weeks on the road, especially with the women's amateur that occurred there at Augusta National, which was fabulous. But, and Diane held it together while you were not on the show for a couple of days. You joined us one day, I think. But, it was fun stuff.
It was neat.
Yeah, it was fun stuff. There's that voice in the background. I think that is the
there
lovely.
There she is right now. There she is. There she is, the lovely, the talented Diane Knox. How are you doing this morning, Diane?
I am great, thank you. How are you guys?
Hey, we're good. It's good to hear your voice again.
We're very good.
Hey, you said with Secret Golf, she's also with PGA Tour Live, PGATour.com, Golf Talk America. I mean, she's a busy young lady.
That's why I'm back. I went to the RBC Heritage for a few days, but then I'm doing the highlights for PGATour.com Thursday. Well, no, what day is it? What day is it today? Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Friday.
I'm going to be in the studio about 3 o'clock today to start putting together some highlights and then hosting them. So it's good fun. But I love talking about this tournament because it's one of my favorite stops on the tour. And last year, Frank, we were there together. So this year, when I was there for a few days, I missed having you there.
Hey, I miss seeing you there. And what do they wear there? They wear plaid?
Tartan.
Hey, you bought a tartan. You bought a tartan skirt last year too. Do you still have it?
Yeah, tomorrow I'm gonna wear that for the TV highlights because I thought it's a good Saturday outfit to wear. But it's funny because they do have it's with it being the RBC Heritage. If you go way back to the olden days, there was a lot of Scottish people that inhabited that part of the US. So they really have a huge nod to Scotland and real traditions. And of course, the winner gets the tartan jacket. But I found out last year, because I said to them, what tartan is this? Because obviously in Scotland, every individual clan has their own tartan. So I thought, I wonder what one they chose to have for the RBC Heritage. But they actually got their own tartan designed and made in Scotland. And it's like this place in Edinburgh that makes like original, genuine Scottish tartan. And they made them like so much material and they keep it in a vault near the course. And then they have to make the jacket from it every year. But it was a great story and I loved hearing it because it's such a proper traditional nod to Scotland.
Hmm. Hey, Frank, I'm curious, when you drink your favorite beverage from Diane's home country,
yes,
do you also wear your tartan Bassett skirt?
I have tartan underdrawers.
Does that go hand in hand?
Tartan boxer shorts I wear, yeah.
With the Bassett insignia on it?
Yeah, pretty much.
You must have to wear them a lot.
Oh, listen.
The amount of whiskey that you like to consume, you must like to
listen to this. This is Beat on Frank on Betty Ford week. Come on.
Oh, God.
I do love my scotch. I do love my scotch, and it's my favorite drink and my favorite country. And
it's just a heritage thing. Yeah, it's a heritage.
It's a heritage.
You're doing
thing.
It as an honor, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. It is an homage. To all the great golfers that came from Scotland. There you go.
Okay. Hey, I want to ask both of you guys a question here, and we'll go back to the Masters for just a second, as everybody has talked about ad nauseum probably by now. But the great comeback and what Tiger did and everything else, and it's been brought up as possibly, and in today's world of overhype. My question is this being overhyped too, because we seem to make everything bigger and grander than it ever had been in the past? Is it the greatest comeback in sports, in your opinion? And others that come to mind would be Michael Jordan coming back, certainly Muhammad Ali being out of boxing for years, coming back, winning a heavyweight title, even Ben Hogan, who people forget about, what an unbelievable comeback he had to make, situation, a near-fatal car accident. Where do you rank it, Frank? And then Diane can follow up with that. Where do you rank this?
I personally think that it ranks right up there with the greatest comebacks in all of sport. I mean, I don't think that you can take golf and pit it against boxing and pit Hogan against Woods. I think it's one of the greatest comebacks in all of sport, but one of, not the, in my opinion. So when I was right there on the 18th green when he putted out, and it was pandemonium. It was unbelievable, the excitement.
You and a couple of friends.
Yeah, me and a couple of other 100,000 people.
There were a few people there.
Diane,
what do you think?
Yeah, jump in on this. But by golly, there was nobody leaving. I was there all Sunday afternoon, or Sunday. Got there about 10:30, 11. Nobody left. Everybody stayed. It was incredible.
I can imagine. I was actually doing work for PGA Tour, so I was back in the studio in St. Augustine, and oh my gosh, the atmosphere was unreal. And I remember I went for breakfast with my family on Sunday morning, and we were talking about it, and we were like, is this really going to happen today? Like, is this day going to be one of those days that we're going to remember for the rest of our lives? And I think it will be. I agree with Frank. I would say it's definitely one of the greatest moments in sports history. But I think the thing that really makes it different is that, you know, the age that we live in now, everything is reported. Nothing goes amiss. So, for example, we know that Tiger's flawed. And, you know, I'm not just talking about his personal life, but with all the back surgeries and the game not being what it was. And then he made all these attempts at the comeback and they kind of failed for a little while. But I just think that with social media now, everything is reported. Everything is so scrutinized and everything is hyped up for such a long time. But I think that what this showed us is that Tiger, I mean, he's not perfect. He's a flawed human like all of us. So for him to be able to come over all that adversity, and bearing in mind 2 years ago, the guy couldn't even walk. So for him to come back and on the biggest stage in golf, one of the biggest stages in sport, he managed to do what he did. But the thing that really got me was the way that he celebrated it, because I think for the first time we didn't see like the grit, determination, and we didn't see the fact that he was almost like, yes, I did it, all in your face. He just enjoyed it. I think he just looked so happy that he got to that stage.
Do you think too, Frank, that he was, I mean, his thoughts, and he talks a little bit, but he's still, although making changes in his personality, and we've seen him become much more affable, if you will, than he was in the first incarnation in his 20s and 30s, but he still holds his cards really close to the vest and doesn't give you an awful lot even in post matches, and didn't even in this.
He didn't in the
he was
in,
nervous. Did you sense that he had a feeling that this could happen, but oh my God, I still have six holes to play or four holes to play, and he looked like he was as determined as ever. There wasn't that confidence that maybe Diane was talking about. In the past, you just kind of knew. He knew, everybody knew, I have the lead and it's over now. Do you have the sense he doubted that at any point on Sunday?
No, I don't think so at all. I think he played his game. I think, and Diane, you can speak to this too, strategically, he thought through every shot. He knew what he was going to do. And then when you had two men before him hiccup, then he said, okay, I'm still playing my game. I'm going to put it in the center of the green. And that's what he did. I think he strategically played that course probably – as much or more than he had ever played Augusta National before. I just think it was it was maturity, determination, game plan, and stick to it.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And then the fact that it got to 12, and of the final six golfers on the course, four of them put it in the water. It was a case of Tiger just had to do what he was doing. As you say, he had the game plan. He knows the course inside out. And a huge part of that is knowing exactly what you're going to do. And I think he played it to perfection. Knowledge, experience, everything. And it's the experience of that feeling too, of being on that grand stage and having this huge pressure on the back nine on Sunday at Augusta National. That's a lot. Like, it's a huge amount of pressure. And everyone kept saying beforehand, oh, Francesco Molinari is so cool and calm and collected, and the pressure is not going to get to him. Well, the pressure did get to him because it's the first time that he'd been in that position in the Masters. So I think that had a huge amount to do with it. And interestingly enough, Tiger bogeyed the fifth hole every single day in the tournament. And the fifth hole was the only hole that they'd made significant changes to this year. So I thought that was kind of interesting that hole got him every day.
That is interesting. You know, guys, for our listeners who have not been to Augusta, the scoreboard, and y'all know where it is, it's right there behind 8. You see it behind 18, or you can look across 1, and there it is, the big manual scoreboard, where they pull down a panel, and it's a panel of 3 holes every time when they're updating scores for the players. Well, coming in on the back 9, it was just packed, okay, from the clubhouse all the way down around 18, you know, 50 deep. And the scoreboard, we knew we would hear something from out on the course, a roar. And then you would anticipate, and they would go Molinari, okay, and they would drop the board down and then bring it back up. Finau, they'd drop the board down, bring it back up with his score. Tiger, they would drop the board down toward the end of the tournament, and they would sit there for a second, sit there, and sit there. And all of a sudden, bam, they pop the board up, and it's a birdie, and the crowd is, it's bedlam around 18. While the other players are trying to finish, everybody's cheering for Tiger, who's out on 14, 15, 16. So it was more electric than any tournament I've ever been to, guys. Ever.
You know what makes me think of, too, is that is such the tradition, such the old school that Augusta still can maintain. And part of that is you have to leave your phones at the gate. If you have phones out there, and I'm not against people having phones, but if you had your phones out there, people would have already known that, right? There isn't that drama because you can either watch it on your phone live as it's happening or certainly have live updates and know already before it gets to the manual scoreboard.
Yeah, agree.
Whatever might have happened. That drama is something that's very, very unique to Augusta because of that lack of social media, lack of actually knowing everything the second that it happens. And in that sense, I think it's pretty. That's one of the reasons they don't have phones. They also don't want rings and all the everything.
Sure.
But that, I think, adds to that kind of drama that everybody's scoreboard watching when normally you don't even have to worry about scoreboard because we already know the scores. I got it in my pet and my palm in my hand, right? And so I think that was really, really kind of cool the way you described it because I've heard other people say the same thing of how everybody would hear something and you'd see like a million heads turn to the scoreboard and they all had to watch.
Exactly.
And wait. What's going to happen?
Well, Diane, you were there the first part of the week, Diane. What was the feeling like in your opinion the first part of the week before play started?
It's magical. And I feel very lucky. I've been there in the past 3 years now and I get to go with Steve Elkington, who is my boss at Secret Golf. And because he's a past major winner, he gets treated extremely well. So we get lovely passes to the clubhouse. And I mean, it's just the whole place is magical. And every time I've been, you just pinch yourself a little bit because it's like being in Disney World. It really is. It's like being in like this fake magical kingdom. And because Elk knows so many people there, this guy, Possum, he's one of the caddies there regularly at Augusta National. And he's the caddy for Elk every time he went there to play. And he took us on one of these behind-the-scenes tours of Augusta National. So what they did is they have lots of tunnels underneath the course. And like a big tunnel to get to the media center. All the merchandise stalls and the concessions, they basically restock them using these underground tunnels and then they're stocked from the ground up. So Possum took us in a golf cart and we went through these tunnels to see the inner operations of Augusta National. And normally you'd be forgiven for thinking like, behind the scenes at such a busy place, it could be a little bit of a mess and disorganized. It is perfect. Like, everything looks immaculately perfect, even underground. But the vibe at the beginning of the week was just, I think it was extra special this year because there was that anticipation for Tiger Woods, and he had been playing well. And Jack Nicklaus had said earlier in the week that he'd played a practice round with him at Augusta National, and he shot the easiest 64 he'd ever seen. So I think there was a lot of hype, but the hype was definitely warranted.
Yeah, I think so too. Now, we also had another event outside of the ladies, the amateur championship, women's amateur at Augusta. We had the tournament, of course, and we also had a knockdown five iron tournament from my living room, from inside the living room, out the front door, across the street, and into the neighbor's yard, who, by the way, had a huge plate glass window, Tim, that was in danger every time someone stood over a shot. So Diane got into that that action. We had Elk, me, Brendan Sweeney, Danny Medina from Tucson. We had a good time hitting all of Diane's golf balls.
Did the neighbor know you were doing this?
Absolutely not. No, they almost.
To be fair, we did put Brendan outside with an umbrella, and we were just trying to hit Brendan, and he was actually quite an easy target. We were all doing pretty well.
Best use of him ever.
Best use of Sweeney ever from the French Lick Resort, a great sponsor of ours, by the way. We did put him out there across the street, and with a huge the Gus Busters that we have for PGA Tour Radio, the big umbrellas. Uh-huh. He had that umbrella pointing it at us. And he would say, clear, no cars are coming up and down the street. And we'd hit the shot. And if it was going for the window, it was his job to block that shot.
But then when Sweeney came back into the house and he attempted to hit the shot, I'm standing kind of behind him because we were filming each other. And I just watched how he lined up his ball, and I thought, oh, I don't think I'm standing in a very safe place here. The good thing I moved, because he crushed the ball. He smacked it off the right door frame. The ball ricocheted all throughout the living room. I'm like, either somebody is going to die or Fragment TV is going to get busted.
Well, it was a dead giveaway. Danny Medina said he looked at me, and it was a dead giveaway when I said, I'm going to the kitchen for this one. I got out of the room. He said, maybe I'm not in a good place either. So my point
here. People don't rent houses to other people at Augusta. Yeah.
Well, this house is going to be renovated.
We're going to hit golf balls off your living room floor.
That's hard. Oh, yeah, it won't hurt it too badly. Yeah. But all in all, we had a great time. Masters Week was fun. Having Diane there was just a blast. Yeah. And she had to hang out with all the guys.
Diane, first of all, talking with Diane Knox with Secret Golf, PGA Tour Live, PGAtour.com. And joins us quite regularly here. I've got to go back to what you're saying. And I don't pretend to know everything about Augusta. I don't know that many people know there are tunnels for Augusta with big enough for golf carts to go in and stuff. I had no idea that they had that underground
and
system. It makes complete sense that they don't want people walking around the grounds carrying boxes of stuff to go to the pro shop and everything else. It makes a lot of sense. But I had no idea.
And you never see that. Like, I think at other PGA Tour events, any events, you know, you'll be walking on the golf cart, walking on the path between holes, and golf carts will come up behind you, and they'll be like filled with crates of beer and water and sandwiches and whatever, going to replenish. And you just don't see that. And that's exactly why. But apparently, a couple of years ago, Augusta National said, how can we make this better? Like, it's already amazing, but how can we make it better? So they thought, let's go to the people that do this every single day to the highest standard in the world. So they went to Disney, and they said to Disney, like, how do you recommend we improve our operations to kind of get them to the level that you guys function at? And that's when they said, you have to build underground to replenish everything.
Yeah, so Disney designed
it. That's really cool.
And they also have people.
So it's
they
been
have
there for just a few years, 4 or 5 years?
I don't even think it was that long ago.
No,
because
just a couple
I think
of
it was
years,
when.
Yeah.
Yeah, the new merchandise shop has been open for 2 years, and I think it was just right before that.
Yeah, so there's a rumor that they built a tunnel right under 12 there, and that's what sucked Molinari's ball and Finau's ball and into the water. They turned on the big vacuums, and as the ball came over, just pulled it right back into the water.
It's like there's hydraulics, Frank, right, in the fairways, that all of a sudden a ball looks like it's okay. Lifts up, and then the ball disappears. What happened to my ball? Guys underground took it.
I was seeing all these conspiracy theories on social media. People were saying that. Yeah. They just wanted Tiger to win. I'm like, no, I don't. didn't. Be
that's,
quiet.
That's just nuts. That's
pretty funny.
Just
you know nuts. What else? You know what else was? What else was great about it? And I'm curious about your reactions, both of you guys, and Frank, you right there. But to see, and he certainly had the enthusiasm back in his first year when he won in '97, Tiger winning. But the enthusiasm that he showed, to me, is also part of what sets him apart, which is what makes Tiger special, not only as a player, but the fact that we always talk about him moving the needle in the cliches, because non-golfers will still follow Tiger. Because Tiger brings an unusual excitement to golf that normally is very staid and some people think dull and boring, because there isn't a lot. And we talked about Bruce Koepka, Brooks Koepka the other day, Frank, and saying, well, he doesn't get a lot of notice. He doesn't seem to do much when people really even give him credit or thoughts about him winning another tournament. And look what he's done. But he doesn't have the emotion, and that's not to fault him. It's just his personality. Tiger brings something like that that very few other guys on the tour, you'd be hard-pressed to find, have that emotion. I think it would be a good thing for other guys to have, because I think that's in large part why he's so popular. People love to see, as stoic as he may be on the golf course, when he does something great, the fist pump, the jumping up and down, the way he reacted with his family and everything, that worth the price of admission right there.
Yeah, it is. And Diane, you know, we all know the players fairly well. I mean, we're around them all the time. Diane knows them as well or better, really, because her brother plays on the PGA Tour, Russell Knox. And so she's around those guys a lot. Diane, what is your opinion about why Brooks is not as recognized? He's a three-time major winner, for heaven's sakes. Out of the last seven, he's won three? I mean, come on.
I know. I just think, again, it comes down to these guys' individual personality. And I think that, you know, they're not playing as part of a team. So it's not like if they're a little bit quieter and a little bit more under the radar, then it's all right, because you have these, like, massive teammates that are going to take all the attention. You know, it's a single sport. And I think Dustin Johnson's another great example of that. He never gets, like, massively overexcited, and that's fine. Like, he can just go about his business and he can do whatever he wants. The thing is with DJ and with Koepka too, they've proven it. They've proven it on this major stage many times, and they can behave any way they want. I really just think that it's an individual personality thing.
Yeah, I think Tim's having a little technical issue. He's back with us now. But Diane, I just, and Tim, are you back?
I'm here.
Okay, good. You went away for a second. But what I was going to say is, we were talking about Brooks and DJ, and I used to joke. I said, Dustin Johnson is like, should be the poster child for Xanax. I mean, he just is just so calm and collected. It's like, you know, they put him on the electric shock treatment because he just doesn't react. But let's go back to Tiger Woods and what you said, the excitement. Here's the deal. 1997, a young Tiger Woods walks off of 18 and is embraced by his father as he's walking off of 18, when he had that historic win at Augusta. Fast forward, 2019, Tiger Woods walks off with an historic win at Augusta, and who runs up and embraces him but his son, and Charlie. And that everybody started crying, Tim and Diane. All of us were boohooing. I mean, literally crying out loud, because it was so emotional how that occurred. And Diane, I know Tim's kind of going in and out, but what's your opinion on that?
Yeah, that was one of the greatest things. I was crying. I think I started crying on 16, actually, because I thought, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
I love the fact that he had said afterwards that Sam, his daughter, she had a soccer tournament on Saturday, and I don't think it went so well. And he had said, hey, want to come up and watch Dad play in the Masters? And they were like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so, really?
It's because it's weekend then. Which is great, because that's just a typical kid thing, isn't it? But that moment is just so special, and you could see that. Of course, Tiger was thinking of his dad in that moment too, because it takes him right back to 1997, and I'm sure just everything that his dad did for him to get him to where he is. But, oh my gosh, they'll remember that for the rest of their lives, and that's going to go down. That picture of Tiger hugging his dad before was so iconic, but I think this one is going to beat it. It's just like the most special thing to be able to celebrate and have your kids there with you.
Yeah, it really was. And I mean, then he hugs his mom and his daughter and his girlfriend and then his agent and his housekeeper, his nanny, whatever, for the kids. I mean, it was so emotional. And so no one leaves after that, Diane. No one leaves the grounds.
But the other thing is, it shows a human side to Tiger. And sometimes we dehumanize our sporting heroes, especially when okay, if bad things happen in their personal life, then we're like, yeah, okay, that brings back a human element. But when they play so well, you do dehumanize them and you see them as kind of like robotic and, oh, they can just do whatever. They're not like me at all. But then when you see a moment like that, when they just want to be with their family and they're just enjoying it so much and so happy with what they've accomplished, then it just makes them seem like normal, relatable human beings. And I love seeing that.
Yeah, and Tim, we were talking about the dehumanization and how Tiger, coming full circle from 97 to 2019, first his father hug, now his son hug. Diane was saying we dehumanize our sports athletes based on some of the things that happen. And this brought back the human element to Tiger Woods in probably the most positive way that could have ever happened in the world at the greatest time. And let's face it, he came off the Tour Championship. He almost won two majors last year. He wins the Tour Championship. Now he wins the Masters. What does this say for 2019? I think the PGA Championship at Bethpage Black, where he knows that course well, and Pebble Beach coming up, he knows that course well, the U.S. Open. Two more. Now, the question's going to be when we go back across the pond, because that's not a real familiar course. But I think Tiger Woods has a chance now. I really believe that he will make and break Jack's record in his lifetime. I think he will.
Which is shocking in the sense of so many people, including myself, I'll readily admit, never thought he'd beat Jack's record. After seeing the comebacks and the failed comebacks that we talk about, if you remember, two or three years ago, he had chipping yips. Remember, he'd hit balls that wouldn't even make it from 20 feet off the green. It would roll back to his feet, and you're like, oh, my God, he's not even the same guy, right? And you're thinking, okay, it's not going to happen. Well, based on that, I think most people would certainly say, well, he obviously is not going to win a major. He may not win another tournament. So the fact that the final surge that and made him healthy enough to get his confidence, to have the full swing, to not have to worry about the injury, made a huge difference. I would say, yeah, if you had asked most people the odds of him now winning three more, four more majors, I got to think, when you do four a year, it's one thing to do Super Bowls when you only have one a year. When you have four majors a year, and you think over the next five, six, 7 years, he's going to play in 20 or more majors, can he win three or four of those? I think most people are going to say, yeah, I'd give him a pretty good chance. I'd like to have been that guy that put $85,000 down on him for the Masters.
$1.2 million Hey, Diane, Tim, here's a scenario for you. And I said this before he won the Masters. I said, here's the way to get to Jack. Just go ahead and win the Grand Slam this year, Tiger. Win the real Grand Slam within the calendar year.
Yeah,
that's not as far-fetched as most people think it is. It really isn't. So I don't know. Anyway,
I think Jack holds closely his majors. As much as he cheered, and we all saw that he was in the Bahamas, I think, fishing, right, during the final round?
Yes.
But made a point of tweeting or somehow getting a message out, congratulations to Tiger and everything. It was very gracious. But I do think that he, as any athlete that has records, if you have home run records, if you have NBA scoring records, whatever it might be, as much as you get older and you're out of your time period now, there's some pride there that's like, I kind of like hanging on to those records.
Hey,
Eric Dickerson has talked about it a lot when it comes to running backs and running right. He's like, 5 years, I kind of want my records to hold up until I'm gone. I think Jack still is like, I'd like to have 18 be the big number that nobody passes. Hey. But boy, if Tiger gets close, if he gets a 17 or 8, can you imagine him passing Jack? That would be unbelievable.
That's huge. Well, here's a record for you guys. 299 consecutive cuts made. Nobody will ever beat that record. That was on the LPGA Tour, and that was Jane Blaylock that did that.
Is that right?
Jane Blaylock.
299?
299 consecutive cuts made.
What happened on 300? She had a big number right in front of
her. I asked her
that. Trying to get to 300.
I said, what do you remember the most about those 299 consecutive cuts made? And she said, number 300. She wanted to get to 300 and didn't make it. So I mean,
I bet you it was a missed putt or something here or there.
Is that unbelievable?
What's Tiger's? We don't know.
But Diane knows.
A long time, didn't he? Didn't Tiger go like 7-8 years without missing a cut at one point?
I don't know. I would love to know that.
70 something or something like that. I don't know. I'll have to.
He only played 20-25 times a year.
Yeah.
But I bet you. I think it
was close to 200.
Something like that.
Yeah, We need to look that up. We'll get our crack Golf Talk America staff on that and check it out.
Talking to her right now.
Diane is the knowledge in the group. That's for sure.
Diane's our that's crack for
sure. I love numbers. I love stats. They're my favorite thing. I do not know about that, but I'm going to go look it up.
I like numbers when I balance my bank account, and they're in the positive realm.
I would like your numbers too.
No. It's whatever. Hey guys, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
No, I was just going to say, when you talk about Tigers making a lot of cuts, it does bring back that era I don't think we'll see again, because today's guys aren't of the same mindset. It's not unusual at all to see whoever's number one, Dustin, over the last few years, Jason Day, Rory, Jordan, for them to go 10 tournaments without missing a cut is a long time. 20 would be crazy. Mm-hmm. To ever think that they could get to near 100 straight tournaments without a cut, I don't think it even phases them. Yeah, they miss a cut, they're almost like, okay. Tiger had such a different mindset, a Michael Jordan kind of, I'm not only going to beat you, I'm going to demolish you kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He didn't want to miss cuts. Whether he's going to win a tournament or not was irrelevant. He had pride in the fact that I came here to play. I didn't come here to play for 2 days. I'm here for 4 days. And I don't think any of today's players have that same feeling about it. So anyway, it's just another one of those that stand out.
Yeah, let me tell you, Michael Phelps was there watching the final round. He had never been to the Masters. Yeah. It was his first Masters. And he said he was more excited and thought this was one of the greatest feats in all of sport he had ever seen. He said he'd never seen anything like this in his life. And, you know, he's won a couple of
he's only got like 50 gold medals.
Just a few. And then Sugar Ray Leonard was there and got hit by a golf ball. I don't know whose ball it was. But Sugar Ray Leonard got hit. I wouldn't want to be the guy to hit him because he could walk out there and whip
Sugar Ray Leonard.
You.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I'm 62. I can still whip your butt.
Yeah exactly. So Diane, the takeaways from the RBC. We're into round two. A lot of folks are not playing as well because this golf course is the greens. Spieth said, by the way, I got augusted here in his first round at the RBC. You were there. Yeah. Course conditions. What's it like? I know the greens are a little slower than Augusta.
Yeah, and actually yesterday I thought that overall I saw a lot of putts getting left short. I thought that the greens were probably running a little bit slower than everyone expected them to. But the course is beautiful. It's such a lovely walk if anyone's going to head there for the weekend. It's for a spectator. It's one of the best places to walk because it's just beautiful and the holes are all pretty close together. It's a nice leisurely stroll. But it's the fairway. You have to be so accurate off the tee. Anyone that has accuracy issues is going to struggle around Harbortown Golf Links because you have to hit it straight. And that's why it definitely favors, I wouldn't say you look at these big hitters, even though I know Dustin Johnson is right up there again today, but it's one of those courses that you wouldn't automatically look at them and think, oh, cool. Even I think the ninth hole is a perfect example because it's a par four. It's like, 340 or 335 to the front of the green. And yesterday, we were actually, I was following Russell. We were on the green on nine and everyone was putting. And then this ball just comes flying down and lands just short of the green. And it was someone who hit driver off the tee. So it does give you that option on a few holes that you can just absolutely smash it. But accuracy is going to be your number one thing.
Yeah, it is a beautiful place, Tim. I don't know if you've played that course before, but Harbortown is just it's magical. It's Pete Dye. It's typical Pete Dye.
I have not played it. I think if I would dominate it. I feel confident, but I have yet to.
I'm going to call Art Selinger for that one. We'll call Artie and see what he says.
by the way, a guy named Knox is playing right now. He is one over. After he shot, I guess, even par for the first night, he's one over today, right where the cut line's going to be, Diane. So hopefully your bro will pull it out and get a few birdies here and move above the cut line for that. Jordan Spieth is right around there, too, as you said, Tommy Fleetwood. So some pretty good golfers maybe a few other guys got augusted, too, because there's some pretty good golfers that are right around the cut line.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before, Frank, that tournaments right before and after majors are tough sells, right, for the tournament directors to say, guys, I know you're going to play Augusta in a week, but you got to come here. Or I know you just finished playing the U.S. Open, but you need – and so they've got a really good feel.
Yeah.
But that's tough. It's a real challenge with these guys in the schedules today.
Yeah, and Russell being plus one, Diane, I mean, you're with him all the time. I get to see him at certain events and watching practice. And Russell is an incredible player. I mean, he's an incredible golfer. Mm-hmm. But there are also about 144 other incredible golfers. And it's just the competition is so stiff and so tough. Did Russell give you any reaction to the Masters this year, by the way?
I met for breakfast on the Sunday morning, and he had said, oh, I don't know, I'm feeling senile. I think that he could be great today, and obviously not so much, but he said, he was like, unbelievable watching Tiger, unbelievable. Russell's a huge Tiger guy, like he is playing golf really because of Tiger Woods, which I think a lot of these guys are. If you look at guys that are in their 20s and early 30s, they have been influenced so heavily by Tiger Woods, so that's why they're out there today. But yeah, Russell yesterday, he had a good ride. I walked all 18 with his coach, Bradley Hughes, and I kept saying to Bradley, what's he going to do here? What's the game plan? And when he would maybe hit a not-so-great shot, I'm like, what went wrong? But Russell said yesterday he got so unlucky. At one point, he hit an incredible drive. It must have been about maybe the sixth or the seventh, and landed in a divot. And it was like off a really fat, thick, horrible divot. So he was like, there was no way I wasn't going to hit the green. Yeah,
You've hit a nerve. You've hit a nerve with Tim. He believes that should be ground under repair and always has.
Yeah, I was really that really annoyed me yesterday because there was no way that he was going to be able to get to the green in two after landing in that, after hitting such a good shot off the tee. And then on the eighth, he was hitting his approach and he slipped and his ball went in the water on eight, which is like the tiniest bit of water to the left of the green on eight. And he was like, my foot just slipped. Like there was nothing I could do about it. So he had a few unlucky moments yesterday. So we just need we need them to be returned today in the form of karma.
There you go. Cross our fingers, cross our toes, cross our legs, everything. Let's get Russell back in there. He's it. You're a lovely family, Diane Knox. Your entire family, Russell.
Oh, thank you.
But the one thing about your brother, and then I'll hush about your brother because this show's more about you right now, is that Tim, he has a new car. We're not going to say what it is because I don't want people looking for it in Ponte Vedra or Jacksonville. But what's the horsepower on that car? Something like 700 something horsepower in that car.
Yeah, it's 700. Yeah, ridiculous. Yeah. But hey, listen, when you've got like two wins under your belt, you can do that.
I didn't know they could do that with those Kias, Tim. That's right.
I didn't either. Shocking.
He had his. I walked past the car at Ben Ponte Vedra during the Players Championship, and Diane said, "That's Russell's car." And of course, it said Russell Knox on the parking spot. And this thing is a hoss, baby.
They gave it away.
And you know I'm a car freak.
Yeah, I'll bet.
This car is a hoss. I was trying to get Diane to get the keys for us so we could take it down to, you know, Sonic and spin around the Sonic driving in it once, but she wouldn't do that for me. So.
Or get Brendan Sweeney.
I've driven it before. It's
golf
a beast.
Balls
it
over
really
it.
Is.
Yeah, it is a beast. It looks like a beast. Yeah, Brendan Sweeney, no way. Anyway, so Diane, I know you've got to get rolling and get over to start preparing for your event this afternoon. Everybody needs to go to secretgolf.com and pgatour.com to watch Diane's rap show this afternoon. It's going to be good.
Yeah.
And by the way, before you go, Tim, I had the opportunity to have Taryn and Diane with me, the two lovely young ladies who do a lot for pgatour.com. And so I was standing between them both, and I was thinking, this could be the Golf Talk America crew right here. This would be perfect. And then a flash of Tim sitting crying in his oatmeal. And so I felt so bad.
Is that what went through your head? Diane, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. And continued success with everything you're doing. Thanks for joining us every now and then. We'll have you on again, give you a call, and probably bother the heck out of you in the next couple of weeks, okay?
Excellent. Please do.
All right, Diane. Give my best to your family.
All right.
I will.
Take care.
Thank you.
All right, dear. See ya.
Bye.
All right. Diane Knox. Yeah. Secretgolf.com, which, if you don't know, is a website that has all kinds of professional golfers of all different classifications, if you will, from that have different instructions and really personalize the game of golf and videos where you go out and play golf and you watch them play in their casual clothes, if you will, and shorts and everything. So it's really, really cool website to check out and learn a lot about golf. SecretGolf.com, the brainchild of Steve Elkington.
Yeah, absolutely. And Elk was a lot of fun. By the way, I haven't told you yet, but guess who got to ride down Magnolia Lane?
You did tell me that you did.
Oh, I did. Yeah, that's right. It was Steve. Yeah, that was pretty
cool.
Because
I said, who was chasing you?
Oh, that's right. That's right. I did say that.
At the end?
Yeah. Did they catch you? Yeah. Hey, get that guy. What's he doing?
I got to the end, and I spent the rest of the day in jail. I could go down Magnolia Lane.
Yeah, it was an exciting Masters. Well, now we're in the RBC. RBC's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
This is we didn't do it this year specifically because we just needed a break. And we're going to get started again. A lot going on over the next few months for Golf Talk America and travels. A lot going on for you. You got some big tournaments coming up in Texas. So,
and you've got something coming up at French Lick, do you not?
I do, French Lick.
Are you going there in another few weeks?
Well, I am. I'm going to be up there. Our buddy Mark Zucchino is going to be doing some filming there. He's coming in, and we're going to be working with him there at French Lick. So the end of May is when that occurs. I'm sorry. That's end of May.
End of May, I think it is, yeah.
Yeah, and that's right the week or 2 weeks after the PGA Championship where Tiger Woods will hoist the trophy for two in a row.
Put your money where your mouth is.
You know, I don't have $85,000 to throw away just in case. I wish, but no.
In golf, because the guy goes against the whole field, right? I mean, Tiger, people are thinking, I mean, a lot of people ask me, they go, how did Tiger have 14-1 odds that guy got? I go, well, because it's Tiger against 120 guys. You know, it's not just a team against a team. You got...
Yeah, it's not Tiger and Phil.
You got to pick him against the whole field. So the odds are, if you can pick the right golfer, I'm not saying you're going to win $1 million, but that's the way to do it. I'm telling you.
Win the lottery, whatever. Hey, by the way, our good friend Ryan Palmer was doing well in the tournament yesterday.
Yes, he's playing well.
He's playing good.
4 under and playing well, yeah.
And our friend Jordan Spieth, not so much. So.
Yeah, he's actually Ryan's now 7 under as we speak. So
wow.
Right up there with the leaders. So good luck, Ryan Palmer.
Absolutely. Well, couldn't have a nicer guy.
All right, Frankie, let's play some music.
What do you want to play?
I think we got to get out of here.
Motley Crue? Motley Crue?
Pick something out of your repertoire. Oh, look at that.
That's a story for another time, buddy. The Motley Crue music.
Story?
Can't tell it on the air.
All right. We do appreciate Diane Knox for joining us. And, again, she'll be with us again real, real soon. Check her out once more at PGA Tour Live, PGAtour.com, and SecretGolf.com as well. For Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thank you for listening to us. We appreciate it each and every time you join us. And please remember to join us next time right here on Golf Talk America.